We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, morning.
Well, there goes Maria's.
You turned my mic on. Thank you.
Hey, mine's on now, too. Cool. It makes it ever so much easier to do the program.
That mic always gets turned off. Or not always. If it was always, I'd remember to check
turn it.
It
back on.
Yes. Or you remember to change the locks on the door, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you guys managed to get in anyway. All right. Well,
going through walls trick is really special.
Thank you, John.
Let's begin starting with local and the No on I-522 campaign seems to be getting more money.
Yeah, that's the GMO campaign.
Broke a major record this week, the No on I-522. For folks who haven't been paying attention, the Initiative 522 is the initiative to require labeling of foods with genetically modified organisms in them or genetically modified products in them. The No campaign this week received another $5 million from the Grocery Manufacturers Association, and so it's collected a total of $17.1 million. And that broke the record for donations to defeat initiatives in Washington State. The previous record was $16.9 million spent by the American Beverage Association to defeat the pop and candy tax in 2010. Now, the Grocery Manufacturers Association has now become the No campaign's top donor, having given it $7.2 million. Monsanto is in second place with $4.8 million, and DuPont is in third place with $3.2 million. And then three other companies, Bayer Crop Sciences, Dow, and BASF Plant Sciences, have all given about $500,000 to the campaign.
What I don't understand is that, you know, you look at the PR releases and God help me, after having done this for a couple of decades, I'm on some really interesting email lists for press releases. I had an interesting conversation with Tim Iman yesterday. You meet the strangest people doing this. You know, all their PR talks about how wonderful this technology is and it helps feed people and feed more people and combat hunger and yada, yada, you know, et cetera. If this is so wonderful, why are they so terrified of consumers knowing that there's this exciting choice for them that they can get these kinds of foods? They don't want people to know about a product they claim is so wonderful, or a technology, I should say, that they claim is so wonderful. I don't get that.
No, that's a good question. Kind of interesting too this week is the Seattle Times was looking at the commercials that are running. You know, there's only about a month left between now and the election.
Yeah, and ballots actually get mailed out in about 10 days.
Fairly soon, yeah. And so the Seattle Times ran an article this week looking at the TV commercials that both sides are running. The Yes campaign's raised about, you know, $4.5 million, which isn't as much as the No campaign, but it's still a sizable sum. So they're both running TV commercials. And the Seattle Times concluded that both ads are mostly false. But, of course, they didn't try to measure the degree of falsehood in the two ads.
And speaking of false, I think that's called false equivalence.
Yes. Now, the Yes campaign says that the initiative, if it's passed into law, won't cost taxpayers or consumers a dime. The No campaign says it will cost you a lot of money, approximately $450 per person. Now, who's right or who's closer to being right on this? Now, the Washington State budget officials, they looked at Initiative 522 and they had to figure out the cost of it. And they sat down, they figured out by doing all the calculations that implementing the law by the state health department would cost taxpayers about $3.4 million over 6 years. Or about, if you break it out per Washington resident, that's about 8 cents per Washington resident. Or if you break it out by taxpayer, since not all residents are old enough to pay tax or make enough money to pay tax, that's about 32 to 55 cents per taxpayer. That's not so you have to ask yourself, who is that closer to? Is that the folks claiming it's not going to cost you a dime? Or is it the folks claiming that it's going to cost you $450 per person?
But the folks who claim it's not going to cost you a dime do not include generally companies that are major advertisers in the Seattle Times.
Yeah. And then if you look at it, you know, the food companies say, well, it's going to cost us more to reformulate our products. Well, that's assuming that if they do reformulate all their products. My guess is that they're not going to. They're only going to add the words contains genetically modified ingredients on the labels of their food, which is not going to cost consumers anything in higher food prices.
And why, would they reformulate their products if they're so wonderful now?
Yeah. And even if they do decide to reformulate, say, some of their products, it would probably be a gradual process and taking a number of years. And that would give growers time to adjust and start growing fewer genetically modified foods and more foods that are not genetically modified and that the market, in other words, the market will adjust, and prices, if they go up for a short period of time, will probably go down in the long term.
That's assuming they can find clean seeds now.
Oh, I think they can.
All right.
I mean, there are other countries around the world where they're not growing genetically modified corn and soy and cotton and wheat and so forth. So, yes, there are clean seeds out there.
Yeah, but Monsanto's working on that.
That's true. They
yeah,
are.
It's true.
Very, very
Which
hard.
Which is why it's important now for consumers to put their foot yeah. down and say, we prefer the non-genetically yeah. modified.
And speaking of ballots coming out soon, 2 weeks from today, we'll start going through the ballot for our annual recommendations on this show. So something to look forward to.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of labels and people's health, the Health Exchange went up this week.
Washington is one of 16 states in the United States who decided to set up our own exchange for under the Affordable Care Act to offer Washington residents the opportunity to select from a number of different insurance plans that all have the same benefits packages, but have different cost schedules on them. So you will look at plans and be able to compare them apples to apples in terms of the benefits, instead of comparing apples to oranges to lemons to grapefruits to eggplant.
In various stages of ripening.
Yes, and you will, but the differences will lie primarily in how much you pay up front for your monthly premiums versus how much you pay when you go to visit the doctor or get your prescriptions filled. So that's where you'll have to make a determination as to what you want to buy. The website to visit is wahealthplanfinder.org. It rolled out for the first day on Tuesday, October 1st. And after some stumbles on Tuesday and Wednesday, it appears to be working smoothly now. So for folks who have been waiting to go online, I would wait another week and then get online and do it. More than on its first day, more than 170,000 people visited the site.
And that's just Washington State.
This is just Washington State. Yeah, there are an estimated 1 million Washington residents without health insurance. A number of those people will qualify for expanded Medicaid coverage, but in order to find that out, they will have to visit wahealthplanfinder.org. The state expects at least 130,000 people to register for health insurance coverage through 2014, and another 280,000 in 2015, which means there are going to be around 200,000 to 300,000 people in the state of Washington who feel they don't need health insurance and who are willing to pay the small tax penalty on their tax return for not being covered. But it's a good first step that a lot of people showed up on the first day to register. Of course, now that's also been a problem nationwide because, like I say, 16 states decided to set up their own exchanges. That means there are 34 who have not, and the people in those states have to go through the federal government's website, which is healthcare.gov. To find out what their plan options are. And on the first day, October 1st, on Tuesday, when it was rolled out, there was pretty much gridlock on the federal site and on several of the state sites as well. For example, the New York State site had 10 million attempts to reach its site on the first day, which is even a little bit suspicious. I mean,
in a state of 19 million.
Yeah, New York state officials said, well, we're investigating whether or not there were some maybe people who don't like the Affordable Care Act who were trying to block others from getting on the site.
Yeah, or just denial of service attack.
Yeah, denial of service attack. And California had 5 million hits on its first day. So there was something a little suspicious going on in those two big states. But other states, the number of hits ranged from 70,000 to about 200,000 on the first day, which seems much more reasonable. But it also shows a huge demand for the options provided under the Affordable Care Act. And I think that's something that just didn't really register with politicians, in not only at the state level, but particularly at the federal government level. These are folks in Congress who have always been covered by health insurance, and they don't really realize, I think, how bad it is when you can't afford health insurance and you don't have it through your employer. You're dealing with a health condition where it's day by day. You're trying to just kind of wait and see, and you're worried and you're not sure whether you should go to the doctor and risk having to pay huge amounts of money to get treated, or whether you can handle it on your own, or if you have a family member who's ill, like a child, for example. I don't think politicians really understand the desperation of those kinds of circumstances and how many people are in that situation.
And how quickly it can really financially destroy you.
Yeah.
And really the whole phenomenon of the way the ACA rolled out this week puts the lie to a couple of cherished right-wing talking points. One is that the free market is adequate, because obviously the free market is still there, just like it was a week ago. And yet you've got these huge numbers of people who aren't getting what they need through that system, to the point where they're turning to the ACA. And the other piece of it is, it's fascinating to me that, you know, a lot of the rhetoric around the ACA is, you know, government tyranny and you know, they're going to control your healthcare costs. And so you have 34 states, and in a few of them they just were slow getting the health exchanges up. But the vast majority of those states, the reason they don't have an exchange set up is either they're a very small state, but more frequently it's because it's a Republican governor or Republican-controlled legislature that refused to go along with the health exchanges, refused to go along with the expansion of Medicaid. And so, you know, rather than take control of the process at the state level, presumably try to tailor the infrastructure to the state's needs, you know, they're giving away their own power and then complaining about lack of power. It really is very disingenuous. But I think the biggest issue, again, is what Maria was talking about, that there's just this disconnect between the often very, very wealthy, very comfortable and comfortably insured people who are making these public policy decisions, and the reality that's faced by
a large
number of Americans who, you know, at some point or another, get sick. And it certainly has happened to me. I, as many people know, have some chronic health issues, and they've destroyed me financially. And it has happened for an awful lot of people, and really Washington State, even though it has had a very tight budget and there have been cutbacks and it's very difficult, is one of the more fortunate states in the country in terms of having a state and state level politicians who are willing to try and address those issues. In a lot of parts of the country, that is not the case, and that's why the demand for this was so great, and why the Republicans are working so hard now, even to the point of trying to shut down the government and risk crashing the economy if they don't extend the debt ceiling. Why they really see this, and we'll talk about this more in a moment, as a central issue in terms of trying to stop the implementation of the ACA, because they understand perfectly well that once it is fully in place, it is going to be very popular.
Yeah, and it's going to mean a lot of people in their states in particular who will be looking to the federal government for a major benefit, something that has really improved their lives. And furthermore, they'll be looking at a government that was run by an African-American man and a Democrat, and that's going to be really bad for the Republican Party. Now, I also want to talk about, too, that in a lot of those states that refused to expand Medicaid, there are going to be a total of about 8 to 9 million people who will not be able to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Those 8 to 9 million people are people who didn't previously qualify for Medicaid, but who should qualify for Medicaid now under the Affordable Care Act, but they live in a state that is not expanding Medicaid, is not accepting the money from the federal government to expand Medicaid. Because remember, the federal government is going to pay 100% of Medicaid expansion through 2016.
But it's run by a state-to-state level.
Yeah, and after that, it'll pay 90%, and the states will only have to pay 10%. But the states have to manage it, and they have to decide to expand Medicaid or not. That was the Supreme Court decided that the federal government couldn't mandate the expansion of Medicaid, that states should have a choice. And unfortunately, a lot of Republican states where there are a lot of poor rural uninsured people, particularly in the South, decided not to expand Medicaid. Now, in those states, two-thirds of poor blacks and single mothers and more than half of low-wage workers won't be able to get health insurance coverage because they won't be able to get on Medicaid. Those folks fall under the floor for getting subsidies for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, because the federal government, if you go on the healthcare.gov site, you plug in your income level and your other demographic information, if you fall under the floor, the federal government will assume that you're going to go on Medicaid, whether or not your state has decided to expand it. And if your state has decided not to expand it, you are out of luck. And a lot of those people, like I say, half of low-wage workers, people who have a job, whether that's waitresses, whether it's cashiers, retail workers, home health care providers,
fast food workers.
Yes, those folks will not be able to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. And it's really particularly a phenomenon in the South, as I said. In a lot of those places where the Republicans worked really hard to gerrymander the districts when districts were redrawn. So those folks, a lot of them African Americans and Hispanics in Texas in particular, Texas has the largest population of folks who are uninsured in the nation, and also has a Republican governor, Rick Perry, who refused to expand Medicaid. Those folks have been largely disenfranchised by Republican gerrymandering, and the fact that they will not be able to get health care coverage either just further deepens the racial divide in America, particularly in those Republican states.
All right. There's two words that might solve a lot of those problems.
What's that?
Single payer.
Yes. Yes, I was just thinking that too. If you had a single payer system, it would just be a very simple thing. You'd probably get a letter from the federal government that would say you're automatically registered. If you want to know how to get your benefits, log into this, you know, this website, et cetera. And you wouldn't have to go through all this. It wouldn't have to be administered by the states. There would be no having to get your health insurance provided through your employer. You wouldn't have to pay premiums, et cetera. It would just be a matter of you're automatically enrolled.
And in terms of cost control, you wouldn't have an entire class of, what's the technical word? I think leeches or maybe vampires that are extracting money from the healthcare system and driving up costs.
That stand between you and your doctor. Now, the Republicans have been running ads saying, oh, you're going to have President Obama in the room with you and your doctor. Or you're going to have a government official in the room with you and your doctor. That's really not how the system works right now. The way the system works is you have, before you can go to the doctor, you have a health insurance company representative there as the gatekeeper, saying whether or not you can afford to go to the doctor right
now.
And
if so, what treatments you can get.
Yeah, and if you do go, it determines what medicines you can take and what treatments you can get.
And we'll be covering the having Obama with you in the room later in the NSA segment.
Yeah.
All right. Before that, though, there are a couple polls out this week.
Yeah, a couple of polls released this week showing that Americans really blame the Republicans for the government shutdown. CBS News did their own poll, and then Quinnipiac University did a poll, and they both had exactly the same result, that 72% of Americans disapprove of shutting down the federal government over the Affordable Care Act. That was pretty amazing that they both came up with exactly the same statistic. Among the Tea Party, this I think was very interesting, among Tea Party supporters, 57% support the shutdown, which means that 43% of Tea Partiers don't think that the government should have been shut down over the Affordable Care Act, which I think is pretty amazing. CBS News said that in their poll said that 44% of Americans blame the Republicans and 35% blame Obama and the Democrats. Quinnipiac University poll showed that 74% of Americans disapprove of the job Republicans are doing in Congress. That's three quarters of the nation, guys. 64% of voters oppose blocking an increase in the debt ceiling as a way to stop the Affordable Care Act. That's almost two-thirds of Americans. And 55% blame Republicans for the gridlock in Congress versus 33% blaming President Obama. Even among Republicans, 49% said that they support the government shutdown, but that means that 44%, almost half of Republicans, don't support the shutdown of the federal government.
And I want to talk about a couple things about those polls. The first is that a fairly large percentage of Americans blame Republicans for the shutdown. Yet news coverage, they've gotten that opinion despite most news coverage that's out there, because as we heard on Counterspin earlier also, an awful lot of the media coverage, both as in the run-up to the shutdown and in the days since it's begun, has been of the, neither side can come to a compromise kind of thing, or gridlock in Washington, or, you know, the both parties do it kind of narrative. And that's not simply the case here. And the other thing that's notable about this, and I think this is reflected in the Tea Party numbers you just gave, it's not the Republican Party per se that is blocking the operation of the government and potentially the extension of the debt ceiling. It is a relatively small minority within the Republican Party that's doing it. It's about 60 or so Tea Party legislators out of the 230 some in the House. So it is a minority of about one quarter of the minority the minority party, who happens to be majority in one house out of in half of one of the three branches of government. That's what's bringing everything to a halt. And the fact that the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, is basically going along with that rump caucus within his own party because he's trying to save his own job as Speaker. That's what's bringing all this to a halt. It's
cowardly
remarkable
position.
It's a very cowardly position. It's also a position that in about 6 weeks from Sunday violates his own oath from office. But what are you going to do? The thing with this is that all these narratives about, the two sides can't compromise. What compromise? You're talking about implementing a law that is on the books that has been found constitutional by
the
Supreme
Republicans
Court.
Voted for.
Well, that the Republican Party think tank in the terms of the Heritage Foundation, in terms of the Heritage Foundation, originated the bloody idea.
Yes,
in preference to something like single payer, which would have made a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. But they originated the idea before a black guy became president, and that apparently has made all the difference. It really is remarkable that as many Americans understand the nature of this shutdown and who's responsible and what's holding up resolution of it as they do, given how bad the media coverage has been. Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on from that to this week's surveillance news.
Yeah, some more of Edward Snowden's documents were released this week, and the New York Times ran an interesting article. Since 2010, the NSA has been collecting personal data to create graphs of American social connections, so-called metadata, so that, of course, everyone in the U.S. is included in this picture, not just foreigners. Some of the data that they've been collecting is bank codes, insurance information, Facebook profiles, passenger manifests, voter registration rolls, GPS location info, tax records, and property ownership records. And there are no restrictions on how much of this information and what kind of what they call supplemental data they can collect to enhance their intelligence gathering capabilities. Now, this stuff has never been reviewed by the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, or Congress. This has all been done in secret. The NSA has just been doing this on their own with nobody looking out to see if and asking, does this violate the Constitution? Now, the NSA uses phone and email metadata to also create chains of association. So, they gather and collect this information. They keep it online for 5 years, but they also keep it offline for an additional 10 years. So potentially, an email that you sent 15 years ago could put you in prison today, depending on who you sent that email to, and what they've done in the interim and who they know and what they've done in the interim.
And remember when we were talking a few weeks ago about 3 degrees of separation?
Mm-hmm.
Third tier. Yeah. So, uh-huh. so it's who you sent that email to 15 years ago and who since they might have Facebook friended and who that person might live next door to now and what that person did 6 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, it's insane.
Whose kid is going to school with who else's child, you know?
Yeah.
It is insane.
Yeah, and so that really big facility that you've heard of that they're building in Utah, they're no longer just building in Utah because Utah is not large enough. Part of the warehouse is now extending into Nevada and Arizona and a corner of Colorado as well. I expect they'll take over the entire Rocky Mountain region before the end of the year.
Yeah. And in addition, General Keith Alexander told the Senate Judiciary Committee this week that the NSA had tracked cell phone locations of all Americans in a secret test or pilot program. But he did not say whether or not that test or pilot program is actually up and running and being used currently. He also admitted that, quote, only one or two terrorist plots have been thwarted by these controversial NSA surveillance programs, although he didn't say which one it was, whether it was one terrorist plot or two terrorist plot, or whether he just said one or two because he couldn't actually think of any terrorist plots that had been thwarted.
And remember, the government's a very loose definition of what constitutes a terrorist plot.
Yes.
All right. On the other hand, if you remember when they were trying to implement Star Wars, how they would keep doing these missile tests over the Pacific, they would fail. And I'm kind of hoping that's what's happening with this technology, too.
I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either.
A little more robust than their Star Wars plan.
On the other hand, think of all the good marketing data they're getting.
Yeah.
just a minute to cover what Greenpeace.
Yeah, this week Russian prosecutors brought piracy charges against the 30 crew members of the Greenpeace ship that had approached and attempted to send some of their activists aboard a Russian offshore oil platform in the Arctic in order to bring attention to oil drilling in a very cold and dangerous region of the world. Those piracy charges can carry a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison, but I suppose we shouldn't be surprised given that the Russian government recently sentenced three members of Pussy Riot, the activist musical arts group, to prison terms and hard labor camps in Siberia.
Yeah, and God help them if they happen to be gay activists.
Yeah.
Events.
Yeah, this coming Thursday, the 10th, from 7 to 9 p.m., Seattle Speaks Wage Worries. It is a free panel talking about whether the $9.19 an hour minimum wage in Washington State is adequate to feed the working poor in this state, and whether it needs to be raised. And that, of course, is an issue that's coming up in a lot of different venues these days. That will be at New Holly Gathering Place. It's a big community center in the New Holly development. It's at 7054 32nd Avenue South. So check that out.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
www.eatthestate.org.